Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian, and with me, as always, is Chris. And Chris, we are here recording during the All-Star break. The All-Star break that seems longer than ever, even though it's the same length it's been the last couple of years. But there was actually some pretty exciting Mets stuff that happened in the last few days. So we're going to get to all of it. But I think the place we have to start is with Pete Alonso's dominant victory at the Home Run Derby. This is his second in a row. There was no Derby in 2020, rather. So he won 2019. He won 2021. He won 2019, rather. But Vlad Jr. was sort of the star of that Derby, hitting, I think it was 91 home runs, something like that, over the course of his rounds. But because of the way the matchups worked out, you know, Pete had won the Derby. This year, Pete was the absolute star, hitting 35 home runs in the first round, and then not requiring too much effort to win the next two competitions either. I know there's no practical value in being great at the Home Run Derby, but it's pretty fun to be great at the Home Run Derby, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, going into it, he had this attitude that he was going to win it. And he did, and it didn't look like it was difficult for him to do. You know, it's crazy to watch these guys who are all of the players in the league are extremely gifted, professional athletes. Seeing them get tired doing things is like a very good indicator of how hard those things are. Mm-hmm. So watching some of the other guys and you know, this time format, can lend itself to a little bit of like the tortoise and the hare, where you're just trying to get to the next round. But a bunch of those guys in the first round looked like they tired themselves out quite a bit in the process. So to not only watch Pete hit monstrous home runs and at such a high rate, but to just look relaxed and like he wasn't trying too hard. And big time credit to Dave Joust too, who you know, served up just perfect batting practice pitches for Pete to hit there. But yeah, it is a lot of fun. I think Mets fans overwhelmingly are totally into it. And I thought it seemed like the crowd in Colorado got into it too, even though their guy was eliminated. You know, Pete taking his timeouts to pump up the crowd, basically. Like, it didn't even look like he took them to get himself a breather. It was more optional. And yeah, he hit the most home runs in every round. Obviously, you have to do that in the semifinal and the final. His total would have been even higher if, you know, if it wasn't sort of like, you know, a walk-off format.
Yeah, in the semis, it seemed like he was just he could have kept going for another 10 or 12 home runs. In the finals, he maybe was tiring a bit, but I don't know if he was just slowing down because he knew he had it. Like, it's
right.
There's an insane level of confidence with Alonso at the Derby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but I absolutely love it. You think back, obviously there have been Mets in Home Run Derbies before, but and some really great players, but I know it's just an exhibition sort of fun contest or whatever, but it's nice to have a Met who is just like, yep, he's going to go in there, he's going to win it, and there's not really anything anybody can do about it.
Yes, that is That is absolutely a fun thing. And I hope that he keeps doing it. Like, as much as I want other people to get a chance to do it, like, there's something fun about just having a guy. Like, it's fun to be able to identify a very specific skill that one guy is just the best in the world at doing and watching that guy do his thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and we have the luxury of having the best in-game pitcher on the planet doing that. And, you know, in games that count in the standings, but it is pretty awesome to have Alonso there. Just what a perfect match between the person and the event.
Yes.
And it's one of those things. I know he didn't give like a firm answer on whether or not he would participate next year, but I can't imagine there's any part of him that wouldn't. He very much believes that he is the best at this, and he is.
Yes. I mean,
so, like, I don't know. These guys are all super competitive, and there's a little money in it, and he's still not making much as a guy who is early in his major league service time. So I'd fully expect that he'll be back. And, I'd pick him to win.
Yeah. You know, and it was a nice story having Trey Mancini in the finals with him. You know, Mancini beating cancer and coming back to being a very good baseball player is a fantastic story. And I don't think anybody would have been upset had Mancini won. Just for that piece of it. My brother pointed out to me, he said, you know, I'm a little bit surprised that Pete didn't sort of tank it for Mancini, but you know, these are professional athletes. They're incredibly competitive. But also, the $1 million prize is like twice his salary.
Right.
Because he's still pre-arb, right? Isn't this his last year pre-arb?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, he's still made, it's not technically the minimum, but it's close. And it's still a very nice salary by normal adult standards.
Yes.
But yeah. No, you get out there and you've got that. And look, I think you can still highlight and appreciate the Mancini story. But he's going out there and playing regular season games against a bunch of other teams that are trying to beat him too. And I know the Derby isn't a regular season game, but I don't know. These dudes go out there and they try to win. Like, that's just...
Yes.
That's just what happens. So it's not the fact that he was in the Derby and the fact that he put on a good show of his own. That's a pretty cool story to run with. You know, if he had lost in the first round, it would still be like everything he does this year and beyond is still a great story.
Yes. You know,
Pete Alonso didn't like ruin the story.
No, no, he did not.
You know, even in the Home Run Derby, you don't want to see a guy just roll over.
Right.
You know? I mean, because then you end up with the guy who is the good story where, like, okay, he's, you know, now people are going to say, well, oh, Pete, let him win. You know? And, like, that's – you don't want that. Like, go out and do what you do, and if you win, great. If not, you know, the photos of the two of them at the end are still – they're still pretty awesome.
Absolutely, yes. So I would say if we're sort of ranking the most important things that happened for the Mets this week in terms of, like, media attention, number one would definitely be Pete in the Derby. Number two would be the drafting of Kumar Rocker with the number 10 spot in the 2021 MLB first-year players draft. We have a podcast on our network called From Complex to Queens that I'm sure many of you are listening to, and if you're not, you should. But they have done now, they did a mock draft episode on Saturday and then two follow-up episodes on the first two nights of the draft. And so they covered this topic in far greater context and depth than Chris or I will be able to. But Rocker was one of the two or three biggest names in the draft. It's somebody that I had heard about, you know, a while ago as a stud pick that will never fall to the Mets, And, you know, he fell to the Mets, and he's a right-handed pitcher from Vanderbilt. He was a consensus top 10 pick from the sort of three big lists. Fangraphs had him 7th, Baseball Perspective 8th, and Baseball America 5th. you know, this is extremely exciting for the Mets, especially for a Mets system that is somewhat depleted at upper level minors depth. You know, our minors crew had said they wouldn't be surprised if he is a September call-up in 2022. So to be drafted in 2021 and potentially have your big league debut the next year, that doesn't happen all that often, and it certainly doesn't happen with a player this highly regarded all that often. So the Mets got a steal here, an absolute steal at 10. And I don't have anything super cogent to say about his stuff. I've never seen him pitch. I've seen a couple of GIFs on Twitter and a couple of short videos, but I'm no scout. Do you have anything to say about Rocker aside from just, hey, we got Rocker, that's good?
Yeah, I think that sums it up pretty nicely. I would just add that he's somebody who I know Thomas had tweeted out sort of where he'd put him in his rankings, and maybe some of the other guys did too, and I just missed it. But this is somebody who's going to be considered, I think, one of the Mets' top five, if not top three prospects immediately. That's a lot of fun, especially when you know that three of them are, gaining attention nationally. Baseball Prospectus put three Mets in its midseason top 50 list. Mm-hmm. And, I think it's fair to say that as Mets fans, they try not to, at least the Jeff and Jarrett part of that crew, which is most of it. You know, they're running the show with the Prospectus minor league coverage. And I think if anything, they try hard not to overhype Mets prospects.
Right.
So the fact that those three still made that list of theirs, that's something that kind of stands out. So to say that the Mets might have, it's that list comes out before the draft for a reason. But going into the offseason, it's entirely possible, especially if Alvarez, Mauricio, and Batty. Is it Batty or Batty?
I have heard it both ways, and I refuse to find out, apparently.
Yeah, we'll go with Batty because,
it sounds baseball-y, yeah.
Yeah, but the fact that those three have had such a good year, if they finish strong, I think any reasonable speculation is that Rocker is not going to really pitch much himself this year. Maybe they give him a few short appearances somewhere, between now and the end of the minor league season. But I don't know. The Mets could have four of the top 50 prospects in baseball going into next season. And that's, I don't know. It's an exciting thing when your major league team is also good.
Yeah, and I think it's something that bodes well for the future. You know, we were on Spotify Green Room on Monday having, actually, I thought, a really great conversation with a bunch of baseball fans about all different stuff. If you guys aren't joining us on Spotify Green Room, we're doing it once a week or so. And the conversation we had was we talked about like baseball expanding to different cities and lots of interesting chats. But somebody asked Chris and I what we felt was the Mets' window for contention. And we sort of both a little bit balked at the question because it's a little bit hard to – I don't like talking about that sort of stuff because it's hard to really get a sense of it. But the consensus has been around the Mets for the last year or so. There's a lot of talent in the lower minors, but there was nobody like right on the precipice of breaking through and being a huge star. Well, now you're seeing some of those people make that jump. And so then you start thinking about, well, I want the Mets to re-sign Marcus Stroman for next year. But if Kumar Rocker is going to be a piece in the rotation in 2023, then that free agent signing isn't as big of a deal because you have a highly regarded prospect hopefully coming a year and a half from now or so, 2 years from now, whatever the case may be. And I'm not saying I know teams don't operate that way. You don't operate on the major league level based on what might happen 2 years from now. But it's just nice to look at the plan for a couple of years and think, well, okay, if Conforto walks and if, Stroman walks and if they don't, if they can't keep Syndergaard, it's just nice to see that there are prospects coming up and that not all of the help needs to be found elsewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And you want to see them retain some of the guys that are on the roster that are set to hit free agency. Certainly open to them bringing in more guys from outside the organization at any given time. But yeah, we continue to say, and we mean it, like, we don't care about Steve Cohen's money if he needs to spend a little more to make the Mets a little bit better. But there is still there's some value and excitement in that homegrown stud prospect coming up and making his debut for your team. You know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with getting players who you didn't draft and develop.
Right.
I love Francisco Lindor. He was not drafted by the Mets, but there's just something to it where, okay, that's your guy from day one. He comes up you know, to the extent that the Mets have a budget for payroll, teams definitely take advantage of, you know, those years that guys are super cheap. So, you know, I'm not rooting for players to not make money by any means here. But when you go out and just look at it from a sort of logical standpoint of what a team might do, if Rocker's presence makes them more inclined to spend money on upgrades elsewhere, then, hey, that's great. You know, especially in the short term, while Jacob DeGrom is still as good as he is, you know, you can go. I would hope one lesson from last offseason would be not that you have to pay every reliever who's out there, but maybe put a little more resources into the bullpen over the winter. Because even though it's been good, it sure would be nice to have one or two other guys who were out there all winter that they chose not to sign going into the second half.
Yes, agreed. So I would say number three on the list of things that happened this week that we have to talk about is Taiwan Walker pitched in the All-Star game last night. It was good to see him out there. He had to give up a home run in his one inning of work, but it's the All-Star game. It's not as big of a deal as people make it out to be in terms of import. But I do like that Walker was recognized for the great season that he is having. As loyal listeners know, I was very high on that signing early on, and I totally expected to eat crow over it during the season. But Walker has been a really nice surprise, and although he has cooled down a little bit since the start of the season, he still seems like he is just operating at a higher level than he has the last couple of years. And I know that some of that was injury-related, but it seems like he just has more of a game plan going out there, and it's been really nice to see. Any All-Star game notes you have?
No, not really. Just other than being happy for him getting to go there. And there's nothing wrong with guys getting named when other players don't make it. So the fact that Jacob DeGrom chose to rest and not go, and that Walker got to be one of the guys who got that secondary, slot on the team, that doesn't diminish it at all. It's well-deserved. I actually think it's kind of a nice thing that more guys get that honor that way, because,
yes, agreed.
Look, some seasons you might say, oh man, I don't know if there's, you know, enough true all-stars to fill a roster. But most years you end up with some guys who have been really good and get snubbed, not through anything particularly malicious, but just there's only so many slots and you're trying to figure out a way to put that roster together and play that full game. Very happy for him. And anytime a Met is in an All-Star game, as long as their play doesn't cost the National League the game, that's fine.
Agreed. Like
if they have a great game and help the National League win, cool. If they don't have a great game, but it wasn't the difference in the game, then, you know, that's okay. I mean, even he in his post-game comments, I think, even giving up the home run, I think he was like, oh, it was still fun, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not the player's fault that the league has this stupid home field advantage in the World Series thing tied to the All-Star game still.
So my brother and I were talking about that last night. So my brother is in town, and we went to a bar last night to watch the game together and just hang out. And we were talking about this, and do you think there's any reason to have to give people more of an opportunity to watch the All-Star game? Shouldn't the All-Star game be enough?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I really don't think it's like, this factors into the scheduling of the World Series that nobody knows the teams of yet. So obviously, in some sense, every fan is going to want their league to win, because hypothetically their team might get to the World Series and you'd want to have the chance to go to four games instead of three. But it's not pushing numbers. You know, it's not right. People aren't like, oh man, got to see who's going to get that home field advantage. I just don't understand why it's not, with so much interleague play and I don't know, it's less arbitrary to just say whichever team had more wins.
Right, exactly.
Like, it's just not hard. Whichever did the World Series, throw out whether they were a wild card team or not. You know, throw out any of that other stuff. Just, okay, American League team, National League team. This one won 98 games. This one won 92. There you go. It's just not – it doesn't need to be more complex than that. And it's amazing to me that, like, the gimmicks that Major League Baseball comes up with are so lame.
I mean, you're not wrong about that. One of the things that we were talking about last night was, you know, it used to be, because there wasn't interleague play, the only time that you saw, you know, Nolan Ryan pitch to Ken Griffey Jr. was in the All-Star game, right? And so that's probably a bad example, because Ryan played a lot in the AL. You understand what I'm saying. There were players who you didn't get to see play all that often. Roger Clemens only pitched to Darryl Strawberry in the 86 World Series or in the All-Star game, right? Those are things that just didn't happen a lot. And so there was a lot of intrigue, because you were getting these dream matchups that you didn't get to see. And with interleague play killing that, I understand that they felt the All-Star game needed something. But to me, they should just be, I mean, this is the most exciting group of All-Stars that they've had, in terms of players that have swagger, players that have confidence, players that are having fun with it. It seemed to me like everybody was having a far better time last night than I've seen, you know, elsewhere, when, you know, in previous All-Star games. This crew just seems to be really into being a team, being All-Stars together. They were having so much fun. That should be enough. And show that, Major League Baseball. Show people having a damn good time playing the game. That's all people want to watch. That's it.
Yeah.
This isn't rocket science.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's. And I think it just continues to amaze me, not only with the gimmicks being what they are, but like, baseball talks about what's wrong with baseball more than any other sport. And it's just a little weird that it's such a focus, you know?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with diehard baseball fans who are into the All-Star game. And I think a lot of time, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's not 100%, but you've got enough people who are going to tune in and check it out, because the week starts and you're like, I don't really care about the All-Star game. But then you go, oh, there's four nights without my team playing.
Right.
Oh, maybe let me check this out. And I don't know that it really so much needed any fixing.
Yeah, I completely agree. All right, well, we want to keep this kind of a short episode with it being the All-Star break and all that, but we do want to look forward a little bit to the second half. We've talked about some potential trade targets. We've talked about some, lower-end starting pitching. It does look like Carlos Carrasco is going to be joining the team very shortly. Let's hope that's actually the case. J.D. Davis is coming back. So the Mets are going to be as close to full strength as they're probably going to get in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Aside from getting some more pitching depth, is there anything that you think the Mets absolutely have to do change or approach the second half than differently than they did in the first half?
Yeah, I guess it's mostly the trade stuff, and like you said, we've touched on that quite a bit already. I'll take a little bit more of a dive into some of the relief pitchers who are on those same teams that we were talking about in terms of targeting starting pitchers.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, maybe just tell Francisco Lindor he's not allowed to bunt in the second half. I love him. That's the only thing I don't like about his entire existence as a Met is just that. Just don't bunt. Yeah, we know you're good, and the bat has heated up quite a bit. You know, that's a small thing. I know I don't have any I don't want to say I don't have any, but I don't have any major gripes with Rojas, but I know a lot of Mets fans have been frustrated by some of his in-game decisions. But it's sort of wishful thinking to think any manager is going to change what they, you know, what they do with those in the middle of a season or at all. Obviously Mickey Callaway did things that were far worse that we didn't know about, but that the baseball world did. But anyway, he, as a manager, strictly, you come in and you're like, all right, first time manager, let's see what this guy does. And you run into some frustration points in those like first few months or even the first full season. And then you hope that they learn from it and change. And having seen it happen a couple times now, that doesn't happen. Like the manager you get in the first 2 weeks of any manager's career is the manager that person is. All of which is to say, I think Rojas is fine, but you know the front office is heavily involved in a lot of those things. So I think, you know, having this break, and it'll be pretty quick between now and the trade deadline when they know who they have and sort of finalize their, you know, their plan, what to do in certain situations and all that. I think they should keep up the great work with positioning and shifting. I know every now, once in a while, the other team beats the shift, and that happens. But we know on a longer term timeline that work they're doing is good. It's definitely helped. And not to take anything away from the starting pitchers, but when you do those things correctly and you have good pitchers out there, that's how you end up with, barely anybody spun the ball in play against DeGrom, but
right.
It's still how you end up with DeGrom having historically great numbers. And Walker and Stroman obviously have benefited from it too. And I think they'd be, you know, the first people to say that. Stroman being sort of the biggest fan of his defense when he's on the mound, when something goes well. So yeah, all of that is to say there's not a whole lot. It's more just like, I think Conforto is going to be great. I think McNeil is going to be great. I think Lindor has a monster second half and ends up, you know, as most players do, especially players on that level, ends up with a stat line that looks kind of like one of his normal stat lines by the end of the year. So yeah, that's, I wish I had a more specific idea of something to change, but just my thing, if they want to go get Chris Bryant or another position player, and mix things up a little bit more on that side of the roster, I'm on board. That's fine. You know, I'm certainly not going to complain with upgrades, but just go get a starting pitcher at least and a reliever or two. And, you know, have that depth so that if guys continue to have minor injuries in the second half or get tired or whatever, you just have a little more flexibility. We didn't mention that Sapucki underwent season-ending surgery.
Yes, we forgot to mention that. That is important news.
But that factors in, too. Not that it seemed like they really thought that he was the answer. For a rotation spot down the stretch on a contending team. But yeah, I don't know. I would hope that plus Eichhoff struggling again in his outing, you know, just before the break, not that he was disastrous or anything, but just, I don't know, not great. Castro's struggles over the last, you know, month and a half now. There's enough evidence there that they do just need to get a little more help with some arms. And as we've been saying over and over, they can just be capable arms. They don't have to be Scherzer and Berríos, you know?
Right, right. I mean, damn, I have been stumping for Kenta Maeda, so we're not talking about a truly truly elite pitching here. We're just looking for a little bit of help. So yeah, a couple of things I wanted to mention just about the second half. What I would hope maybe would happen is Luis Rojas is not a very good manager when it comes to bullpen decisions. And I'm not going to belabor this point because I think that a lot of people have said this better than I can. And, you know, that's fine. I just feel like, so I was at the game on Sunday and the Mets had a 5-run lead in the bottom of the first. And, you know, Eichhoff did not look fantastic and whatever, but Rojas left Miguel Castro in for a second inning when he barely got through the first inning, and Drew Smith wound up being available. We had thought from the stands that maybe the problem here is that Drew Smith isn't available and so they have to ride Castro for a second inning. But Smith was available, and so by not bringing in Smith, Castro got into trouble, and then Diaz had to come in and attempt the 5-out save, which he did not get. And then Smith came in and, you know, in the ninth inning when Diaz continued to falter. And so if Smith was available, I don't understand why Rojas wouldn't have gone Castro, Smith, Diaz. And I know this seems like a small point that I'm belaboring here, but I feel like things like that have happened a lot with Rojas. I really, really don't like his bullpen management. And I think that on almost every other part of his job, he has improved since last season. But this is one area where he hasn't improved very much. And I would like to see that happen. And I don't know exactly how you make that happen. You know, I don't know exactly how you tell a guy like, hey, don't be bad at this anymore. So I'm not hoping for any miracles there. But I do hope that his bullpen practices get a little bit better. And I also hope that the starting pitching can give him more depth so he doesn't have to make those decisions. You know, the fact that there was a doubleheader followed by a bullpen game is like a nightmare for a manager. And I totally understand why that's a tough thing to do, you know, to manage. But I just feel like he could manage that better. Aside from that and Lindor not bunting, to me, those are the big changes I would make going into the rest of the season. But ultimately, I think the Mets are actually in a good position. We should mention, too, that the Mets got the worst kind of help last week with Ronald Acuña Jr. being out for the season with a knee injury. I believe it was a knee injury, correct?
Yeah, ACL.
Yeah, ACL. And, you know, that means that the Braves, I would think, are likely not going to be able to make the push to take down the Mets. And so I think the Mets are looking in pretty good shape right now. A little bit more pitching in the bullpen, a little bit more pitching in the rotation. And I think that they have a good shot at winning the division. And that's a beautiful thing, despite the circumstances that might lead to it.
Yeah. 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 No, that sucked. You know, you don't root for it at all, but you especially don't want to root for it when it's a guy who's that good, that young, exciting. And, you know, these guys, you know, we talked a lot about how competitive they are with respect to the Home Run Derby, but these are guys who want to beat the other guy who's the best guy. So look, you're not gonna be like, oh man, it sucks that we might win some more games, but on some level they would love to face Acuña and beat him, just like I'm sure Freddie Freeman and Acuña would love to face DeGrom and beat him, you know?
Yes.
So yeah, that was definitely a bummer. Not good for baseball. And you just hope that he has a speedy recovery and is back either, you know, early-ish or in the middle at least of next season. So, so he can be back out there. And it's a lot more fun when that guy is on the other team, even if he occasionally beats you.
Yes, yes. And again, we were talking before about the All-Star game and just the fun that these players are having. And Acuña is just such an infectious, fun personality. He's very good for baseball. And so him being out is very bad for baseball. All right, Chris, what is your music pick for this week?
So mine, I'm just making sure. Yeah, no, I did not do this previously. Did not realize until it was pointed out a couple days ago that Funkadelic's Maggot Brain.
Fuck came you. Out
50 years ago. What this was that going to be your pick?
Yes, it was.
yeah, we don't coordinate these ahead of time most of the time.
Yes.
There's a record coming out in 2 days that I called dibs on.
Okay, but let's keep Maggot Brain to both of our picks. That's how strongly we feel about this record.
It's the starting point. You know, Parliament Funkadelic, both bands, you know, the whole universe of George Clinton. It's all fantastic. In terms of listening to the records, I slightly lean towards the Funkadelic records. That's not a knock on the Parliament records, but that's just where I fall.
Same.
And, you know, it's, you just can't go wrong with, you know, one, the fact that they started a record with a 10-minute song that's basically a guitar solo, that's absolutely amazing. But, like, opening a record with that is a hell of a choice and a you know, an all-time great one. And then every song that follows is just as good as it gets. You know, it's to me, it's the foundation of a whole lot of music that came after it. And it's not just that, it's that listening to it is super enjoyable, no matter how many times you do it or how you know, long it's been since your last listen, whether it was yesterday or maybe 6 months ago or whatever. One of the best of all time. And, you know, crazy that it's a 50-year-old record.
Yes. This is my favorite record that George Clinton ever put out under any of the band names. This is, in my opinion, like a top 10 all-time record for me. It's pretty close if it's not that high. And like, I feel like everything I want to say about this record, I could say about Maggot Brain, the song, because that is just an amazing guitar performance and fantastic and so different. Like, if you think of what you think George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic are, and then, like, just from an outsider's perspective, and then you put on Maggot Brain, that is not at all what you're expecting. Like, you don't expect a 10-minute guitar solo that starts with a spoken word poem to be from a band called Funkadelic. But then the rest of the record really leans into what you think of as funk. Can You Get to That is a classic funk song, covered by Mavis Staples about a decade ago. I'm a big fan of You and Your Folks, Me and My Folks. It's kind of a short, slight song, but I really like it. Wars of Armageddon, man, just fantastic. This whole album is so good. And it really balances between, like, fun, kind of dancey funk stuff, and then really dark stuff that has a deeper meaning. And it's a beautiful combination. So, yeah. Yeah, this is our first time having the same pick, I believe.
Yeah, I think you are correct.
It only took 70 episodes for us to do this. So. Well, anyway, thank you for listening, folks. We truly appreciate it. Please check out AmazingAvenue.com for all your Mets needs. Find Amazing Avenue on social media at Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Find this show on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts. Rate, review, and subscribe. Those things help us quite a bit. Chris is on Twitter at Chris McShane. I am on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap. And with the second half looming, let's go Mets.